Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a fascinating tool, Agent Rules Kit. You shared a collection of its inner workings, technical docs, a very active changelog, how to contribute, a detailed overview in the ReAMI, and deep dives into documentation, performance, rule setup, and its service-based architecture. Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, please. It's quite a pile of material.
Okay. Our goal here is really to extract the core knowledge and understand how this tool helps AI agents work, you know, more smoothly with different kinds of tech projects.
Exactly. We've got a really comprehensive set. The changelog gives us a real sense of just how quickly this thing is moving.
Right.
While the guides on contributing and the architecture, they lay out its fundamental design. And the ReAMI, well, that provides a fantastic summary of what it's all about and what it can actually do.
So for you, the listener, our aim is that you'll come away understanding how Agent Rules Kit is designed to make AI's interaction with diverse code bases more efficient and, you know, what that could mean for faster development down the line. Ready to get started?
Absolutely. And I think to really appreciate the dynamic nature here, the best place to start is that changelog. It's constantly being updated.
You're right. It's incredibly recent. The latest entry is like literally dated today, May 16th, 2025.
Wow.
That tells you something right there. But even just a few days before, between May 13th and 16th, there was just a huge amount of activity.
A real flurry.
Yeah, we're seeing the introduction of really detailed guides specifically for Nux 3. For those not familiar, Nux 3 is a popular framework for building web apps with Vue.js.
Right.
And these new guides cover key areas like security, SEO, performance, even testing.
And what's interesting there is how targeted those updates are. Focusing on specific frameworks like Nux 3 and providing these in-depth guides, it signals a real commitment to providing very granular, very specific support.
It's not just a general overview.
No, exactly. It's tailored advice for that particular technology.
And it's not just Nux 3 either. Between the 13th and 15th, we also saw full implementations for Nest.js that include support for both standard apps and microservices. And for Go, with support for different architectural patterns. Looks like they're really going deep with these integrations.
Indeed. And this highlights the project's ambition, doesn't it? To offer significant understanding for a wide range of important, commonly used tech stacks.
Mm.
The fact they're considering different architectures within a single stack, like with Nest.js and Go, that's also notable. It shows they recognize that even within one framework, projects can be structured very differently.
That makes sense. Another interesting addition around the 13th and 14th is the introduction and then like a quick improvement of something called the info flag.
Ah, yeah.
It seems like this is intended to give developers a fast way to see key information about their project.
Right. That kind of feature often points to a focus on the developer experience, you know, making things easier, allowing them to get quick insights without digging through tons of config files.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Around May 7th, there was a major shift. A fundamental change in how the whole thing works under the hood.
Yeah.
They moved to what's called a service-based architecture. This involved reorganizing the core files and bumped the version number up to 1.0.0. And the notes clearly state this included some breaking changes.
Okay, that is a really significant step in the project's evolution.
Yeah.
Moving to a service-based architecture, that typically means aiming for better long-term maintainability, making it easier to scale up.
Right.
By dividing the different functions into separate sort of self-contained services, it becomes simpler to update, add new features, test individual parts without, you know, messing up the entire system.
And the breaking changes suggest it was quite fundamental.
Absolutely. A real redesign.
Mm.
What this likely means for you, the user, is a more robust and adaptable tool in the long run, even if there was a bit of pain in that transition.
Exactly. And if we look at the bigger picture, the changelog gives us a sense of how this project has evolved over time. We see the initial version, 0.1.0, introduced a command line interface, or CLI, which is a way to interact with the tool using text commands. Then version 0.2.0 brought in modular code and something called template variables.
Okay.
But what really stands out is how quickly they've moved from that initial CLI to this service-based architecture, now at version 1.7.0, according to another source document.
1.7 already? Wow.
Yeah, and the fact that an AI agent is reportedly playing a big role in this rapid development, going from version 0.1 to 1.7 inch, what, less than a week, according to one of the docs, that's a pretty incredible pace.
It certainly is. That speed, particularly with AI involvement, suggests a highly adaptable and responsive system. It's constantly incorporating new information, refining its approach.
And this rapid evolution, fueled by AI, means you're getting a tool that's constantly learning and improving at a speed we haven't really seen much before in DevTools.
Yeah, it also emphasizes the project's commitment to quickly broaden its support for different technologies. Yeah. They're not hanging around.
And it's not just about big architectural changes and new features, is it? Throughout the changelog, we also see regular bug fixes, performance improvements.
Crucial stuff.
Yeah, it tells us they're not just adding things, but are also actively working to make the tool more stable and efficient.
That ongoing refinement is really crucial for any tool developers rely on. It shows commitment to quality, making the tool reliable and performant for the user.
So, with that quick look at the project's recent and maybe not so recent history, let's focus on what Agent Rulekit actually is. The README gives us a pretty clear explanation.
Right. The README states it clearly. Agent Rulekit is a CLI tool, that command line interface we mentioned, specifically designed to give Cursor AI.
Which is an AI-powered IDE, right?
Yeah.
Advanced Code Editor.
Exactly. To give Cursor AI the rules it needs to better understand different technology stacks. Think of it as providing the AI with a specialized knowledge base, like a cheat sheet, for various coding environments.
So it can offer more intelligent help.
Precisely. More context-aware assistance.
And it has a pretty impressive set of key features, doesn't it? Quick setup for lots of different frameworks, automatically figuring out the project's framework version.
Which is key.
Support for different ways those frameworks can be structured, generating mirror documentation so humans can understand the AI's rules.
That's a nice touch.
A modular design, making it easier to add support for new frameworks, automatically backing up existing rules, a really nice safety net.
Definitely.
And the ability to have different rule sets depending on the specific framework version you're using. That's quite a lot packed in.
It is. And each of those features contributes to that overall goal, making AI assistance more effective, less likely to misunderstand things when working with diverse projects.
Mm.
For example, automatically detecting the framework version. That's key to making sure the AI applies the most relevant rules for that specific project.
Yeah, absolutely. And the list of supported stacks is extensive. We're talking Laravel, Next.js, React, Angular, Nest.js, Vue, Nuxt, Svelte, SvelteKit, Astro, and even a generic option for projects that don't fit neatly into those.
That wide range of support is a real strength. It positions Agent Rulekit as a flexible tool that can be used with many of today's popular web dev technologies.
The README also includes something called an implementation status table, which I found particularly interesting.
Ah, yes.
It shows that the level of feature support isn't quite the same across all these stacks yet. Like, Laravel already supports different architectural styles, while Nuxt has specific guidelines for testing, and Astro has integration with something called content collections.
Hmm. That nuanced approach is important. It recognizes that different frameworks have different conventions. Different best practices.
Right.
Instead of trying to force a sort of one-size-fits-all solution, Agent Rulekit seems to be tailoring its understanding to the specific characteristics of each technology.
And it's worth just quickly going back to that new service-based architecture. The README highlights its benefits. Easier to maintain and extend, provides those automatic backups we liked, a better debug mode for finding issues, a more robust testing system, specific options for React project structures, and improved support for managing application state. It really sounds like this architectural change was a significant upgrade, more robust, more user-friendly.
Absolutely. Those benefits directly address potential challenges in a complex system like this. Easier maintenance and extension, crucial for long-term viability. Features like auto backups and better debugging. They improve the user experience, give you more confidence in the tool.
So, let's dig a little deeper into how this all actually works. The documentation on the service-based architecture and the CLI itself, they give us a clearer picture. This move to services, it's all about making the system more modular, right?
Precisely. By breaking down the functionality into these distinct services, each responsible for a specific set of tasks, the underlying code becomes more organized, easier to manage. The docs outline several key services.
Okay, so we have the base service, which it seems to be the foundation. It provides common tools, like handling files, processing things in batches.
Shared utilities, basically.
Yeah. Then there's the file service. That deals with the specifics of processing files and rules, including managing metadata within the rule files, they call it front matter.
Right.
Handling those template variables we mentioned earlier, and taking care of those important automatic backups.
So think of base service as the toolkit. And file service gets more specific about handling the rule content itself.
Got it. And the config service, well, as you might guess, that's for managing the tool's settings and configuration.
Makes sense. Then there's the Clay service. That's what you, the user, actually interact with. It handles the prompts you see in the command line, progress indicators, just generally making the tool user-friendly.
Right. And the Stack service. This acts as a central coordinator for operations that are the same no matter which tech stack you're using.
Oh, okay.
Things like figuring out the framework version, generating the right rules, regardless of whether it's Laravel or React. And then, of course, we have the stack-specific services like Laravel service, Next.js service.
Which contain the specific logic.
Exactly. Handling the unique architectures and version rules for those particular technologies.
What's really interesting here is that clear separation of responsibilities. The Stack service provides the overall direction. The Stack-specific services handle the unique details. This kind of design makes it much simpler to add support for new stacks in the future.
Because you're just building that one specific service.
Pretty much, yeah. Plug it into the existing structure.
The documentation also highlights some important ways they've made the CLI run efficiently. Things like only loading the services it actually needs right then.
Dynamic loading. Good.
Saving pre-calculated templates to speed things up, template caching, doing file operations in a way that doesn't block the whole tool, asynchronous operations.
Essentially for responsiveness.
And that batch processing we mentioned, for handling large project without hogging resources, there's even something called incremental update, so it only processes files that have actually changed. That sounds pretty efficient for you if you're working on a big project.
These kinds of optimizations are really critical. They make sure the tool is smooth, responsive to use, especially when dealing with large, complex code bases. Using techniques like async operations and batch processing means it can handle significant workloads without slowing everything down.
And let's not forget those template variables like project path and detected version and the use of that front matter configuration within the rule files themselves.
Right, the metadata at the top of the file.
Yeah. That front matter, with properties like globs and always apply, seems to give a lot of control over how rules are applied to specific files.
Exactly. The template variables allow rules to be generated dynamically based on the project specifics.
Like the version it detected.
Right. While the front matter config provides very precise control over which files a particular rule should apply to. And the fact that front matter apparently takes precedence over the default config in kitconfig.json for certain stacks like Astro, Vue, and React. That suggests a move towards even greater flexibility at the individual rule level, more granular control.
Okay, moving on to how knowledge is actually structured within Agent Rules Kit. The guides on rule organization and documentation give us some insight here. It looks like rules are primarily organized into three main types.
Yeah, that's right. There are global rules that apply to everything. Then you have framework-specific base rules, which establish the core conventions for a particular technology.
Kind of the baseline for that stack.
Exactly. And then you have version-specific rules that address the unique aspects of different versions of those frameworks.
That layered approach makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Global rules give you baseline consistency, while the more specific framework and version rules allow for tailored guidance that reflects best practices and features as technologies evolve.
Precisely. Keeps things relevant.
And these rules are physically located in the templates directory, organized first by the stack, then by version. The kitconfig.json file seems to play a central role in setting default architectures, supported versions, and initially linking rules to files using patterns.
Although, as we noted,
right, front matter is becoming more important there, especially for stacks like Astro, Vue, and React, where it seems to override the kitconfig.
So the kitconfig.json acts as a kind of central directory, defining the overall structure and settings. But the increasing use of front matter in the rule files themselves indicates a desire for more localized, more specific control over how rules are applied.
When it comes to actually documenting these rules, there's a recommended structure. A clear title, short description, specific guidelines, examples to show how it works, and notes on which versions the rule applies to.
Standard stuff, but good practice.
And importantly, all documentation must be written in English.
That consistent structure ensures the documentation is clear, easy to understand, and it probably helps with automatically generating those mirror documentation files for humans, too.
Ah, good point.
The decision to use only English likely reflects the global developer community. Makes sense for an open source project aiming for broad contribution and usage.
Finally, let's briefly touch on how someone might actually contribute to this project. The contributing.md file outlines a pretty standard workflow for open source.
Yeah, the usual process.
You fork the project, make your own copy, clone it, download it, create a branch, a separate area for your changes, make your changes, test them thoroughly.
Very important, the testing part.
Commit them, save them with the descriptive message following specific conventions mentioned in the README, push them upload to your copy, and then submit a pull request, ask for your changes to be merged into the main project. It sounds pretty standard for anyone who's used Git.
It's a well-established process, yeah. Makes it easier for developers to jump in. And the emphasis on testing the guideline that all new features should have tests and all tests must pass, that really highlights a commitment to maintaining high code quality.
The contribution guidelines also stress following consistent code formatting using tools like ESLint and Prettier, updating documentation if you change code. And again, that rule, all code, comments, docs must be in English.
Standard practice really helps keep things clean.
And it's definitely recommended to get familiar with the project's architecture and development guides before diving in to contribute.
Absolutely. Understanding the structure is key. These standards are really important for maintaining a consistent, high-quality code base, especially in a project that's evolving as quickly as this one seems to be. Following these guidelines helps ensure contributions integrate smoothly.
So to kind of bring it all together then, Agent Rules Kit seems to be a rapidly developing tool. It's using the sophisticated service-based architecture to give AI agents, like Cursor AI, the detailed understanding they need to work effectively with a really wide range of development projects.
Yeah.
It's focused on being modular, performing efficiently, and having well-structured rules and documentation makes it a potentially very valuable tool for making AI-assisted development more streamlined, more effective.
Absolutely. The speed at which it's developing, driven partly by AI itself, combined with its thoughtful architecture and broad tech support, it really positions Agent Rules Kit as kind of a leading project in this intersection of AI and software development.
And that leads us nicely to our final thought for you, the listener. Think about how tools like Agent Rules Kit are fundamentally changing how humans and AI can work together in software development.
It's a big shift.
What new possibilities does this level of AI understanding open up for making projects more efficient, maybe fostering innovation in new ways?
And perhaps more broadly, what questions does this raise about the changing roles of developers themselves and the potential for even more intelligent, more integrated AI assistance in the future?
Definitely some fascinating things to consider there. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.